and welcome to the Pocket Gamer Podcast. It is episode number 517. We are back after a short break following PGC, and we are back with Rick Cowley.
Hello.
Returning conquering hero of the conference. You hosted round tables, you did talks and panels, and was it fun? Or were you just going, please don't ask me things?
I mean, it was fun. It's nice to be in the driving seat of those kinds of things, I suppose, because then nobody wants to ask you questions. They just want to answer your questions.
That's true.
But no, it was fun. I did a fireside chat with Q Lee of Gameville and Come to Us, mm-hmm. which is really interesting. I did a panel on the inevitable decline of ad revenue. I did a couple of roundtables about recruitment. So yeah, it was a nice big mixture of things to do, and it was fun to be a part of, and the rest of the PG Biz team was part of it as well. And it was just great to be like so involved with it. More so than we usually are in our conferences, because we don't have to stay in a hotel and fly across the world to do them.
No. So this is the second of our digital conferences. If you're following via the, by the way, hi on YouTube, and also in podcast land, you know, because we've talked about these loads. But if you're just watching us for the first time on video, you might not be as familiar with all this stuff. But yes, we held these big conferences called Pocket Gamer Connect, and it's big industry get-together. It's like an E3 or something, but specifically for the mobile industry. Been doing it for years. It's gotten bigger and bigger, and then all of a sudden a virus happened and meant we couldn't do them anymore. So we've taken them online. We're doing them all with Zoom. That's why everything went quiet last week on the video channel, and there wasn't a podcast and things like that. It was great because I was stage managing a bunch of it, so I get to chase down people and go, we've got two speakers, three of them haven't turned up, this guy's here but he can't get his camera working, what's going on? Because I inevitably end up being tech support. But
you love being the man who everyone comes to when things go wrong.
It's funny enough, the problem with that is you get a reputation for it and then people start coming more, including my own family. I am like, if anything goes wrong with any of my brothers or my sister, there's kind of this like message I get, hi, how sick of you are. I'm like, oh, they want to come and talk to me because I'm their lovely brother. And then it's immediately like, this thing on the Switch isn't working. Do you know how we can get logged in? All right. I know your game. Disgusting behavior. But we're obviously delighted to be back, and we're going to cover some news and some new releases and all the things we do on this show. Things like talking about the latest lawsuit to hit Apple regarding loot boxes and their predatory, look at my air quotes, look at them Apple, don't sue me, predatory gambling. We've got stuff about the Game Club subscription service and its arrival on Android. We can show you how to catch Pokemon by cleaning your teeth, and also a bunch of new releases, including the likes of Endurance, Ruinverse, Slay the Spire, out on mobile, very exciting, and more. But first, the news. The whole loot box controversy in gaming has been running ever since the first gacha appeared on our screens, or the first hat appeared on a man in Team Fortress 2's head. And it's only kind of snowballed and continued to run. And it's not going to go away because loot boxes aren't going to go away. No matter how many lawsuits people throw at big companies. The latest in the line is a class action lawsuit, which has been thrown together by some folks in California, I think. And it's aimed at Apple. And the suggestion is, as they often are, is that these loot boxes, they encourage predatory behavior on behalf of companies. And they try and get kids to get addicted to gambling-like behaviors, which leads to big profits for companies. This isn't anything new. We've been talking about this for ages, haven't we?
Yeah, this is just another day, another lawsuit, mm-hmm. another person complaining about gacha and in-app purchases and stuff like that. I think their sort of main complaint is that it isn't obvious enough on the app store that this game contains loot boxes. But
right.
It does say on the App Store, this game contains in-app purchases. And I think at this point in mobile games, you kind of have to accept that that's probably going to mean loot boxes at some point.
Yeah. It's tricky because on the one hand, we're so like embedded in this world that of course we know that when we download a game for free, what that means is you download it for free, and then they're going to try and get money out of you lots of different ways. And some games do it well, some games do it badly and cynically, and, you know, there's always that stuff in the middle as well. But there's still that thing that parents are getting new kids, and they've got wee ones, and they give them their phone, and they don't realize, because maybe they've never played Peggle on their phone or whatever they were going to do before, and then they come back and they look at their bill at the end of the month, and suddenly it's £2,000. And they go, oh, this is definitely someone else's fault. And I definitely not me, should have been looking at my child.
I think that's the thing, isn't it? Is that, I mean, obviously there's more that the industry could do to sort of make people aware of loot boxes and what actually they are and why people want to buy them and why they're still in games. Because I think a lot of the press around them is sort of negative and going, oh, well, they're predatory, they enable gambling, they're a gateway drug into a harder crack of poker. I don't know. You know, it's that always that kind of thing where in actuality, like, if people weren't buying them, they wouldn't be there. That sort of needs to be talked about a little bit more, is the fact that, like, why do people buy them? What's the psychological thing behind them? Who is actually buying these? Because as much as we hear the stories about, like, my child spent $300 on FIFA Ultimate Team last week or something like that, and now it's Apple's fault for not having parental controls, a lot of, like, the huge spenders are people with lots of money, and therefore they can afford to spend that. What I've seen is a business journalist, and obviously I'm probably corrupt by all that. And
you are a corrupt games journo.
Exactly. Right. That's what I'm wearing, the games journo outfit and everything.
You got the shirt on, yeah.
But I think there should be more to sort of educate parents on, like, how to educate your child on not buying these loot boxes, and telling your child, maybe ask me first before you spend my money, or setting parental controls on devices, or not putting your credit card information on your device, or setting up a separate account for your child, or that kind of thing. Like, my niece is, like, 9 years old and has been playing a lot of games, and, you know, even from a young age, like, she never spent any money in-game. It's never been a problem. It's because, you know, it partially helps that my sister and I both grew up playing games, and we understand the economies and that kind of thing, but also it's because my sister has explained to my niece, like, this is what games are like. This is why you shouldn't buy them. This is why I'm not putting my account on your device and this kind of thing. And if she wants to buy something, she has to go through my sister to get it.
Always require password. That's the thing you need to click when you're doing the iOS purchases and whatnot.
Exactly.
But I kind of agree. I'm in the middle of the two camps, because I do think that a lot of this stuff is very predatory. I do think it leans towards gambling. I don't think gambling is good. I don't do gambling. I think it's bad. I've seen lives destroyed. And it's one of those things that you want to be very, very wary of. And I don't like the way a lot of stuff is implemented. I do think it's cynical. I do think they deliberately use psychological devices to try and get you hooked. I think all of this stuff is kind of true. But at the same time, like, this has been true in lots of industries for ages. That's what marketing does and always has done for so many products that you use on a daily basis. And the same thing with, I mean, casinos themselves. Like, all of these things have always existed, and you need to be educated and educate your kids to know what they're getting into. I think at the beginning, people weren't used to these things being in games, and that was the problem. Mm-hmm. Where it's like suddenly it invades the area where now this stuff exists here as well. And people were surprised at first. But it's been like 10 years more since the App Store appeared. And this is pretty par for the course now. And I don't think they're going to be able to do much to change the rules hugely. The only thing they have to do is do it right. And I'm going to bring in, this is my chance to bring in Star Wars Squadrons, which they did the release trailer thing for on E3. Not E3, on the EA little video, and I've been waiting for this game, Rick. Been waiting for a good sequel to X-Wing for about 20 years. No joke. It was a huge formative experience playing as a kid. I absolutely love a proper flight simmy Star Wars thing where you controlled shield balances and power from ions to weapon, all that stuff. I've got VR now. I've got my HOTAS. I am sitting here. My face is ready. But you notice the messaging they put out for that game when they were doing it, because they did the whole, like, hey, new Star Wars game, it's going to be great, and it's going to have a single player campaign, which is all right, and it's going to have multiplayer, but all the upgrades, you play the game to get all the upgrades that affect your ship, and there will be no in-app purchase. Are you? No, none of them. Please come back. I know we did Battlefront 2. Please, we need your money. So they're really, like, conscious now of this whole, the backlash that can occur when you get your in-app purchases wrong. the other end of the spectrum is that people just like give their phone, their like £1,000 phone, to their kid and then just go wander off and do something.
Yeah.
And in the meantime, their kids do everything. It's like, man, don't do that. Like, what do you think was going to happen? That's not... You got to get involved and... Me with no kids, backseat parenting other parents. But still...
Absolutely.
Don't just give them a grand's worth of device and you go fill your boots. They're online. They could be doing anything. Do some parenting, goddammit. So... We'll see how this turns out. My guess is not a lot will happen because, to be honest, not a lot's happened with many of the lawsuits that have come. And despite a few things of like the Netherlands? Somewhere in the Nordic area, I feel like they did manage to get them classified as like a gambling thing.
Yeah.
There was some ruling.
I think it was Netherlands. I think France maybe have done it as well.
Yeah.
There's a few countries in Europe where I'm fairly certain like developers have had to just pull their loot boxes from their games from fear of retribution from the government kind of thing. So...
But,
yeah, you know, attitudes are changing and maybe there'll be something in the future where this works. I don't think we're at that point now where a class action against Apple is suddenly going to change anything or get people repaid their mistaken in-app purchase or anything like that.
No.
But hey, things change. Times are changing.
They do. The model was disruptive when it appeared, but as we've said many times and you said earlier, like, the reason they're there is because people want them because they spend loads of money in it, and that's why it's... The whole sector is bigger than PC and console combined, that's why. But perhaps you're not into in-app purchases at all. Perhaps you yearn for the days where everything was premium and that was all you did. You paid your money, you played your game. Well, that's what Game Club is here to answer, along with things like Apple Arcade and Google Play Pass, which are the big ones on the main companies. A little independent one popped up a while back. And it was actually, the games are curated by Eli, who used to run Touch Arcade, which was another mobile gaming site, which has been going on for a while, like Pocket Gamer has. So it appeared on iOS last year. It just appeared on Android this week. And it's a similar thing to the others. So $4.99 or £4.99 a month. You get a month free trial, and it lets you get access to, I think they're in the hundreds now, about 125 games they've got.
That is a lot.
It's a lot. And there are a bunch of premium games. They've been curated by people who do know about good games. A bunch of them are older. And the idea is that they're trying to sort of save the games from going out of date. In some cases, they've had to go in and they've had to adjust the code and bring them up to date rather than just repackage them. So they are updating them for current devices to optimize them for like the new screen sizes that didn't exist at the time they were released and stuff like that. And the other thing is, it's not streaming. It's all about you pay the thing and then you go to the App Store and you download the game directly from the App Store like you would if you were buying it. That's how they got around the whole Apple doesn't let other stores exist inside its own store problem.
Right.
To give you some idea of the amount of protection that Apple throws in the way of people trying to get access to their store, they had to submit the Game Club app 127 times. And 126 of those times, Apple's like, nope, get absolutely, completely shut it down because it's like having a little shop inside Apple's shop and Apple not having any of that. Google, I'm sure, didn't give a monkeys. They're like, yeah.
Google love it. Google are well up for anybody to just do anything on the platform. I mean, that's the whole thing of Android, isn't it? It's just completely open to everybody.
That's the idea.
But yeah, no, I'm surprised that it launched on Apple first, given... the whole closed garden, walled garden thing.
Yeah.
And that's actually come up again recently because Facebook Gaming was supposed to launch on Apple and they've submitted it 5 times now and it's been rejected every single time.
Oh, really?
And I'm fairly certain Facebook Gaming doesn't actually, like, sell games. It just is, like, a portal for hyper-casual games.
Yeah.
That you play through Facebook. And that's being rejected by Apple as well. So that's quite
just
funny.
120 more times and they'll have it in the bag, don't worry.
I'm sure Facebook can find a loophole faster than a small team like Game Club. But no, it's really cool that a new subscription service is coming like that. I really like this whole idea of, I mean, on the one hand, I think everybody's a bit burned out by subscription services. Because at the minute, we're all sort of like, I mean, I personally have Netflix and Disney Plus and Amazon Prime and Crunchyroll and I nick my parents' Now TV and I've got Apple Arcade and all the other subscriptions, so Xbox Live Gold, well, Games Pass as well, PlayStation Now and PlayStation Plus, Switch Online. Like, the
wow,
number
you
of
really do.
Yeah, I go all in.
Damn.
But the number of subscriptions that you can get and just the constant, like, fragmentation of the market. Like, each one has to have its own ISP, like USP rather, unique selling point. So Game Clubs is that you get access to these older games that maybe would have died without it, kind of thing, and have now been brought back and are made for 64-bit devices, and you can play them again on modern things, which is really cool, and that's a great service. But like, it's another service on top of all the other services that you can get, and so it all just kind of boils down to, is this 125 games that you actually want to play? Is it going to be more games that you really want to play? I don't know. I haven't looked into it much myself. I'm sure it's fantastic, and I wish them all the best of luck, and you know, and everything like that. And if it's clearly doing well enough that they've decided to launch it on Android after a year on iOS, so it must be a good thing. But yeah, it's, I always worry about the subscription thing. Is like, how many more subscriptions do I need until I have access to literally everything?
Yeah, and how much of that can I actually feasibly watch? Like, I try and pare it down a little bit. So I've got Netflix. I do have Prime, but I think that's a hangover from getting a student, you know, cheap sub for a year and everything, because of my partner doing a thing. And then I've just like got Now TV, because it gives you the HBO stuff and the Sky bits and pieces, and that's it. I don't do Xbox Gold. I don't do PlayStation subscription. I don't have Apple Arcade, because my primary device is not. Like, I get stuff through, you know, the work accounts and everything, but I don't use that because I'm an Android user. Like, I don't have a lot. And even then, even with just Now TV, like, three subscription services for videos, plus, obviously, I rent movies, there's still not enough time in the day to watch all the things on there that I'm actually interested in, you know? So what am I going to do with all of these, like, others? It's just, I don't know. I think sometimes your eyes are bigger than usually it's your stomach, but in this case, it's your fingers and your free time. Is the main thing.
Like, I just like having access to stuff, even if I'm never going to use it.
Just the knowledge that the door is there and open.
Exactly, yeah.
And you just look from a distance and go, oh, wow, I could go through there. Not gonna, but I could go through there.
I watch, like, one episode of anime on Crunchyroll a month. And, like... but
there's
when
so
we
much
don't...
anime on Netflix, though, surely.
But when we don't have the subscription, I'm there like, oh, man, I could really go for some Crunchyroll right now. There's some really great new series to watch. Yeah, there is good stuff on Netflix, but there's new stuff on Crunchyroll. And I like the new stuff.
There's new stuff on... They do new stuff all the time. They're doing all those Netflix commission series. There's new Baki on there, and it's rubbish.
They don't do new, silly romance ones. Like Science Types Fell in Love, So I Tried to Prove It.
That title, is it?
That's the title.
That whole thing.
That's the whole thing.
Yeah.
It's so good, James. You got to watch it.
I don't have the time. Okay, so you can go and grab Game Club now for either platform if you want. Now, let's get to the meat of it. Pokemon Smile. Right, so I only watched the thing for this morning. And yeah, all right, it's adorable, sort of. But wider implications here. So what this is a free app, the idea of which is to make brushing your teeth a fun activity by allowing you to catch Pokemon and defeat cavity-causing bacteria while you brush. So the idea here is that you're supposed to stick your phone somewhere and it watches you. And it's like a face app thing where, you know, you hold your phone up to your face and you got your front-facing camera. And then, it'll transform you into a little Pikachu and you got the little ear hats. It'll use AR to put stuff on your face. But you're brushing your teeth. And the idea is it will judge your teeth brushing performance using, I don't know, teeth brushing algorithm technology, and then you will maybe win a Pokemon, catch a Pokemon or something. It's got the
you
horrible
don't
thing
seem
where...
sold on this, James. You seem very confused and sad.
Look, it's obviously for tiny little people and to get them to brush their teeth. Fine. It's got that thing where you can see, like, the camera's placed inside the mouth, and so you've got a row of teeth with the Pokemon sitting inside it as if it were dancing around your gaping maw. And it's a bit weird. I don't like it. But I find it more interesting because what we've got here is the gamification of a chore. Mm-hmm. That's what this is, right? That's what they're trying to do. Encourage kids to brush your teeth, so let's make gaming fun. Now, on the one hand, you're going to get loads of phones covered in toothpaste and water.
Yep.
Maybe not great, because everyone's got it. They've got the phone on a stand in the videos, in all of them. Like, no one has that stand.
I know.
What's that?
And also, like, available, the separate Pokemon Smile stand for your bathroom.
Yeah. Like, as it happens, I do have that stand because I need to film things from time to time, so I have lots of camera stands. But no kid's going to have that. They're going to be there like this with the thing, trying to look at it and brush their teeth, and all, it's going to be covered in water and goo and, just, yeah, slime, and it's going to suck. But what else could we gamify, Rick? What could we fix by the inclusion of the ability to catch a Pokemon while doing it? What is your most hated household chore?
My most hated household chore is definitely sweeping and vacuuming the floors.
Okay. So Hoover thing, suction, suck up Pokemon like Luigi's Mansion. Yeah. So you got your phone, you stick it, that stand, that Hoover, the Hoover phone stand. You know that stand everyone has?
Of course.
Stick that on the back of your Hoover, and then you have to go to different rooms, and then, oh, look, there's a Pokemon. Chase him. And you suck up a Pikachu, and then you catch him.
What? Suck up a Pikachu is not a phrase I expected to hear today. No, that's a terrible idea. I'm sorry.
How is it any worse than teeth brushy Pokemon smile whatever? Come on.
So the thing, put
the bins out. Pokemon in a bin.
How would you even track that?
I don't know. AR thing. Just go out there and you have to have your phone, and then you put the thing and you put the bin bag in the bin, and then maybe there's a Squirtle in there.
Sorting out your recycling, and as you pick up a can, maybe underneath that can is a Charmander. There we go.
Washing the dishes, you still got that same, like, your phone's going to wind up in a bowl of water problem. I haven't thought this through.
The thing I loved most about this Pokemon Smile reveal is that while there was in the Pokemon Presents bit, there was just a little message that came up at the bottom saying, this app will not help defeat combat cavities and this kind of thing. There is no guarantee that this will create a habit of your child brushing their teeth. So, like, in the video, they have, in small letters in the fine print, just gone, this won't actually work, by the way.
No. Catching Pokemon does not improve dental hygiene.
Which I absolutely loved. There's some really cool other games involved in that presents, though, that I would love to
talk about.
Yes.
That was the interesting thing. So Pokemon Smile was a fun little anomaly. What was the good stuff that came out of that little announcement?
So the next one that's kind of announced was Cafe Mix, which looks like Disney SumSum. Remember the little stacky things, and then you group them all together and they disappear. So it seems to sort of crib that gameplay, but have a meta game of you're running a cafe and Pokemon come in and visit the cafe and have drinks, and then some of them you can hire for some reason. I guess they come into your cafe and become indentured slaves, you know, as is capitalism. And so, like, that looks really cool. It's got a really nice art style. That's coming out next week on the 23rd, 24th, I think, on Switch and mobile. That'll be free to start, the Nintendo way of saying that it's free to play. So, yeah, that looks really cool. And Pokemon Company have done a lot of good mobile games in the past with decent free-to-play mechanics that aren't too... They sort of limit how much you can actually spend.
Oh, right, okay.
In a few of them. So I know Pokemon Magikarp Jump, if you remember that.
I do remember that.
Amazing piece of gameplay.
You loved that, didn't you? Yeah.
Oh, such a good game. that had a spending limit of 40 quid. So you could spend like as much as you want, but you couldn't spend more than £40 overall.
It got capped, yeah.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Which I think was really interesting. So I wonder if they've kept that in other games, because I know Pokemon Masters, I feel like, doesn't have that because it has more scope for more spending. But this might not. I don't know. They also said that Mega Evolutions are coming to Pokemon Go. I don't know what that means. Farfetch'd is everywhere in Pokemon Go now. You can get a bunch of stuff from Pokemon Sword and Shield in Pokemon Go. The Pokemon Sword and Shield Isle of Armor DLC landed while they were doing that announcement.
I saw something on Pokemon Masters as well. That got something.
Did it? I don't think it did. Oh, I think maybe there was like attire from Pokemon Masters is in Pokemon Go now. I don't think there was anything Pokemon Masters related in the presents.
I could be wrong. Day before,
because I don't really care about Pokemon Masters. But yes, but the two big things: one, new Pokemon Snap, so a sequel to the N64 classic where they've just they put new in like the game name is new Pokemon Snap,
right?
Not Pokemon Snap 2.
I saw people excited about this because apparently there's a small niche which has been crying out for this for ages.
Oh yeah, Pokemon Snap is like a weird cult classic because of its stupid on-rails photography game where basically you just hurl apples at Pokemon to knock them over and then take photos.
That's
of
what
them.
It is. It's a photography thing.
Yeah, yeah. Do you not know about Pokemon Snap?
Look at me sitting here. Of course, I don't know about Pokemon Snap.
It's a photography thing. I thought maybe you'd be into it. So it's sort of like you're a kid and you're working with Professor Oak to research Pokemon on an island. But the actual gameplay is like an on rails shooter almost, except you're taking photos of the Pokemon, and then they get ranked and graded, and you get points for that, and then you can spend those points on other things, I think. But like, you can use distractions and other things to like get the Pokemon to do certain things. So you can throw them an apple and they'll bounce over and eat it, or you can get a poker flute which wakes up certain animals and puts others to sleep. You can throw balls at them to injure them. But basically the fun thing that everyone did was like threw apples at literally every Pokemon that you go past, because it usually makes them dizzy, especially if you just conk them right on the head, and then they just go, and you can take a photo of that, and it's hilarious. They've not really announced anything for new Pokemon Snap, but it looks like it's basically the same thing, developed by Bandai Namco, so it looks really beautiful and in good hands. So that looks really cool. And then the last thing is that they announced that they have another Pokemon Presents next week, where they're going to announce an even bigger project. Who knows what that's going to be? There's rumors going around that it's going to be a... you know how they did Pokemon Let's Go, Pikachu and Eevee, which is a remake of Red and Blue? So it's rumored that they're going to do that, but for Gold and Silver, which is the second generation ones.
Okay.
Or something similar like that. Most people think they're going to announce like a remake of an older game in a different style. Because it's way too soon for them to be announcing like next Pokemon when they haven't finished the DLC of current Pokemon.
No. And they're trying to expand that lifespan anyway, rather than just immediately going into the next game. Maybe not doing the yearly cycle thing anymore, so...
But maybe it'll be something even weirder if they're doing Pokemon Snap again. It could be Pokemon Stadium for Switch, which would be dope. Another
again, the blank face of a man who's never played Pokemon Stadium.
God almighty. Pokemon Puzzle League, that would be great. I would love that.
Grow up, Rick. Right. So there's Pokemon stuff happening. You can all go and find it if you want to. There's always coverage of this stuff all on Pokegamer.com and all the busy stuff on Pokegamer.biz as well. So if you get sick of listening to us and you just prefer reading things, that's where all the good stuff lives, and it's good stuff. Oh, yes, go and have it. Out and about this week, we're going to start out with Endurance, which is a game from Ivan Panasenko. This is something like, he did a game called Ailment a while back, which was quite popular, and now he's followed this up with Endurance. This is it opens up on a nice 16-bit looking pixel art ship, which looks a lot like the Sulaco from Aliens. And you go inside, and then you're a little scientist, and your shipmates, after something weird happens, suddenly start turning. They get corrupted via a virus. It's kind of zombie-ish. And you have to wander around the ship and try and not die. And to not die, you wind up with a bunch of weapons you can use against them in twin stick shooter style. But at the very beginning, you got no weapons. You're just a scientist, and you have to either run away from or punch your enemies in face. Big maps and stuff feels almost a bit like Metroidine, as much your map in the top corner of the screen. You need to find a thing to unlock the door, so you need to go back up your way. You've played this a little bit as well, right?
Yeah, I think you basically nailed everything about it. I think in terms of like actual playing it, it sometimes feels a bit floaty because it's, you know, moving around with the left thumb on one hand and then swiping to do attacks with the right. But it works, and the actual like melee combat does feel like fairly satisfying. There's a weird disconnect in the sense that like within sort of a minute of playing the game, you're like punching scientists in the face, but like with your like, oh, these are my colleagues, I can't believe they're doing this, punch, oh my god, they exploded into a pile of blood and gore, and it's a bit shocking, that kind of thing. But I think the actual gameplay is really interesting. I think the fact that it's free also is interesting and leads to some interesting design, in the case that like, so because at the start I was doing a lot of fighting, and therefore like when you're in melee combat you can't avoid taking damage because you will just like, it's just trading blows basically. And to heal you have to spend credits that you find throughout the game, or you can watch an ad and heal like 50 HP and then just keep watching ads until you're at full health. And actually I thought that worked pretty well.
They also bake the ads into the gameplay in so much as like it'll suddenly kick in when you do something in game. For example, if you go and access a computer or something, an ad might pop up. which I guess works in the sense of, like, you know, logging onto a computer, you've got a screen, but you can remove the ads. This is a game which you can pay for and get rid of all the ads if you want to. So don't be surprised when they pop up and get in your way. It was one of these things where I was like, it was slightly deeper than I expected it to be based on. Initially, you look at it and go, it's a twin stick shooter. And it's got a lot more of the RPG stuff and inventory management and things like that. I didn't get far enough into it. I played it for about 45 minutes just to see, because I was surprised it starts off quite slow, because I immediately thought I'd be given a gun and I'd just start shooting everyone.
Yeah.
But there's a fairly, you know, there's a decent amount of running around the ship with no weapons, trying to open doors and find your way before it all really kicks off. But yeah, interesting. I'd like to play the previous one, Ailment, and see what, you know, what happened there, because he's got a name for himself based on the back of it, apparently. But
it was kind of fun, like, loading up the game and you get a little message like, hi, my name's Ivan, thank you for playing my game. If you enjoyed Ailment, that's great. If you didn't, I hope you enjoyed this new game. And I'm like, oh, okay, what's Ailment? I'd love to check that out. That's great marketing. That's
it is. Hi,
well
Ivan.
Done, Ivan. That's
it's
actually
very,
really
it's
clever.
Very personable, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's nice. Although I got a bit sick of it. Remember the trend when machines started talking to you, when you got a VCR and you turn it on and it says, hello? You're like, don't you know your place, machine? You need to tell me goodbye. I'm not that lonely. Jesus. Yeah, so Endurance is out for free, App Store and Google Play right now, but you can unlock if you want to. I think it's about £1.99, $1.99. Fancy a look. Now, Kemco have returned. They of the Eternal JRPG, because that's all they ever do. They've built an entire empire, these guys, on making free-to-play JRPGs in the retro, you know, 16-bit style. It's what they do. It's what they've always done. When you download it, you know exactly what you're going to get. There are usually a few things they do to try and make it slightly different. There's like one or two aspects of the game they might tweak or change, but basically the model remains the same. In the case of this one, you've got a character, and that character has two souls, and each of those souls has different combat abilities. So one of the souls is kind of more into melee and physical stuff, and the other one is more into skills and, you know, rangy, manery kind of stuff. That's the hook: one character, two souls. But beyond that, and upgrading skill trees and all that kind of thing, it's JRPG as you would expect. There are, like, just look at, just, you know, Google Kemco, or, you know, look them up on the App Store, and you'll just be met with this scroll of JRPGs. So I played it a little bit, it feels like one of those. Take from that what you will. App Store and Google Play this one's premium, though, I should say. This is a moneyed game. So you can go and grab a look at that. But actually, the nice thing, and Dan mentioned this and I saw it as well, is that rather than everyone being a badass hero, the thing that was a little bit different is everyone's kind of crap in this game. Like, the companions, rather than them being like experts and everything, you've got like, they're all rubbish at their jobs.
So I like that a lot.
There's a rubbish swindler, there's a less than intelligent dwarf, and there's this like quack physician who's a rubbish doctor. And that's quite nice, because usually it's all like, you know, the mightiest from around the land.
Yeah.
But no, you're all garbage. So that's quite cool. But it is still the same thing you've played before. So Ruinverse is the name of that one, if you fancy a wee look. Now, I'm going to defer to you for this, because this is a big deal, I'm aware, but it's something that I've not played because I don't really do PC gaming unless it's VR. Slay the Spire has appeared.
Yes.
And this is a big deal.
It is a game, I'm trying to remember. It involves cards. So it's like a turn-based RPG dungeon crawler type thing using cards, and it's got roguelike elements to it, so you have to do it in all in one run, and if you fail a run, you die, you have to start all over again, but you unlock things that help you out as you keep going, and you also like learn new deck tactics and all that kind of thing, and you get new characters as you go and all this kind of stuff.
It's artifacts, isn't it? Is that the thing that you get?
I think so. I'll be honest, I did one run of this on Xbox and then died, and I was like, well, that's my limit.
Okay.
As soon as I start facing frustration in anything, I immediately stop doing it.
That's it. Rage quit Rick. That's what you call it. But we are very aware that this is sort of a big deal in the space, because it was kind of, not revolutionary, but the taking the deck builder stuff, mixing it with the roguelike, and then mixing it with like a full-on RPG where like the character that you're making is your deck, if you like. And it was a little mini combination of things that hadn't really been done before. I guess in the same way that Clash Royale took the, oh, it's a sort of, it's a MOBA, but it's a sort of small and the thing and the five sessions, and now everyone does a Clash Royale clone. It had a big impact like that, and reviews were through the roof. Everybody loved it. It came to consoles as well. Now it's on iOS. We expect it to appear on Android soon. I think we were expecting it simultaneously, but it didn't happen. So we'll see what happens there. But Dan's done a big review for it over on PG.com. It's come over very, very well. Unsurprisingly, like Hearthstone and all those other games, they work brilliantly on touchscreen.
Yeah.
Almost better in some respect. The only UI niggles he has is there's a couple of issues where, like, there are some things hidden in the lower right-hand and left-hand corners of the screen, which are a little bit awkward. And sometimes when you're dismissing something, there's a couple of buttons that are maybe a little bit too close to each other, and you go to dismiss, and you go, I've accidentally attacked someone. Whoops. But apart from that, it's all come over really, really well. It's premium. I think we're talking like in the £6-7 territory. Yep. Don't speak
so.
out church, but I think it's, you know, up there. But it's immediately shot to the top of the, you know, App Store. And I can see why, having seen some of the gameplay videos. Our man Cameron Bold, he'd played the game before. He did a little video for PG as well. So you can go and watch that or read Dan's review. But yes, everyone's very pleased that it's come out as well as it has. So iOS at the minute will update you as soon as it appears on Android, if and when. What else have we got? Oh yeah, before we talk about the Frog, Stone Age World has appeared. Now this is an IP from like 20 years ago, apparently. I'd never heard of it, had you?
Nope.
Okay,
no idea.
Fine. So it's a prehistoric MMO, which takes a mixture of the classic MMO stuff of going around and speaking to people, getting missions, persistent world, yada yada. But all, this time, it's full of dinosaurs, because we're in the distant past, and you need to collect the dinosaurs. So it's got that Pokemon-y creature capture aspect to it as well. It is super cutesy. The new visualization stuff that's been done for it. I think it's Networld or NetEase or...
Netmarble.
Someone. Netmarble, there you go. One of the Nets. Have taken on the mantle this time. And yeah, it looks like it's skewing very kid-friendly, super-duper cutesy. Nicely done. Almost a little bit like How to Train Your Dragon-ish art style. And I have precisely zero interest in it whatsoever.
Same, and that's why I didn't play it.
I ain't playing this. It's not for me. I'm not going to get into a dinosaur MMO with creature collection. I don't really care. But I understand that there are pre-existing fans of this one. So this might be of interest. And from what I've seen of it running, I looked at a couple of people who were fans, because their opinions are probably better. And they were like cautiously positive about it. Says it feels okay, if a bit repetitive. But that's free to download. That's the App Store and Google Play at the minute. Stone Age World is the name of that one. And it's not the last one, but still, Shadow Frog, or Shadow Frog, as I will always be calling it.
Why?
But I don't know. I just something about the word frog, which needs to be said fig.
I don't think it does. But
don't,
you know,
interrogate
not...
the logic of this. You will be left wanting.
Let's talk about the game instead.
All right, bouncy platforming business, innit?
Yeah, so it's like auto-runner platformer type thing. Kind of like Rayman. It's kind of like a mixture of the Rayman Mini and like the actual Rayman games, in the sense that like it's an auto-runner and you tap to jump and then you can tap again to wall jump and do that to change direction. But also like you have a shadow of yourself mimicking all your actions, and if you bump into them, you die.
Yeah.
Which is, it's always a really neat mechanic, but that's like the whole selling point of this game is like every single level. You have to collect three keys, and there's these maze-like environments. But also, there is always a shadow of you following you and mimicking your movements. So you've got to like take that into account when you're doing your jumps. It's like, okay, well, if I jump here and jump there, then he's going to do that, so I should wait here and that kind of thing. I really like that style of that platforming style. I think it really adds a lot to a game, and it's cool to see a game just adopt it so fully.
It's a memory test thing as much as anything, because like to be clear, when you start, you press tap and your frog immediately starts running, so it's auto runner. And then maybe it's, I don't know, 2-3 seconds, and then your black, the Nega version, if you like, of your character with red eyes appears and starts charging after you. And yes, it will do exactly what you did, but just 3 seconds later. Mm. So you have to be very, you have to like plot your route. As you said, you jump here. And then, no. So by the time he gets here, I'll be able to do that and leap over just before he jumps. And, right, okay. So it's quite, it's an easy onboarding process. It's very simple start, but like it quickly you go, oh.
Yes.
And then you have to start really thinking about what you're doing. What do you think? Like visually it's standard, I think.
It's
like,
simple.
We've seen lots of this.
Yeah, it's simple. We've seen a lot of games like this before. I really like it though, because as I say, I'm a big fan of that style of platforming and that kind of like puzzle platformer, in the sense that it's all about your reflexes, but when to time things and all that kind of thing, less about like actually solving puzzles. So I really like that sort of reflex timing based puzzle and that kind of thing. The one thing I would say is that I again rage quit Rick. I was like bouncing around happily and I grabbed a key and I was doing a whole thing, and then it was a section where it was all just walled off and it was just wall jump, and then slide down and then jump over at this point. I was like, hell yeah, it feels great. And then I walked into a spike that I could barely see because the spikes just aren't quite obvious enough when you're sort of in the thick of it. And I was like, oh. And it was really disappointing to have like a great run just completely ruined by like two tiny pixels that you can't entirely see. So I think, you know, a little bit more obvious artwork would go a long way, just to highlight like there is a danger here, because I didn't even see it when I was like, because I was going back on myself and I didn't see it the first time I jumped over it. So, you know, just being able to be a bit more aware of that, I think, would be easier. Or maybe it's my fault for not paying more attention, but I just think like a little bit more handholding in that regard would have been nice. But as a game, as a concept, I really like it. I think it plays really, really well. Like that whole thing of just tap to run, tap to jump, done.
That still works great. Like those Rayman games, beyond looking amazing and everything, there was a real... We held them up for a long time as an example of this is how you take a console property and then adapt it in a way that keeps the essence of the game alive whilst changing the controls to something that works well on a touchscreen, i.e. a one tap or one jump thing. Yep. They could have quite easily have just brought the Rayman over, and they did the PS1 version, at least they ported that over, and then, you know, you're doing the D-pad and you're doing the virtual buttons, and it's like, this is you're always kind of playing it like going, yeah, cool game, wish I was playing it on a controller.
Yeah.
That's always the feeling. And with the Rayman Jungle Run, Rayman Fiesta, and all of those games, it was just like, immediately you start running, and then the leaping felt so good. And there was no point where I was like, I wish I was playing other Rayman, because it became a different game, slightly. Yeah. And a great one, not better or worse or anything, just really, really good. And this, follows the same idea. In a very lo-fi pixel art style, it's the same sort of tappy principles. A little bit slower. I liked it. I think it works. I think maybe the art style was a bit lackluster for me. It's quite nice and compact because it's only 30 levels at the moment. I don't know if they're updating at any point. But it is also free, and another one which I think you can unlock for maybe $1, $2, something like that. But broadly, no, it was cool. And if you fancy some Shedifig, then you can get that. It's only iOS at the moment. Shush, I'm going to keep saying it. Also, they did a game called Early Worm. This is Odd Rock, the creators. They did a game called Early Worm, which we also really liked. So if you play Shadow Frog and think, ooh, maybe go back and check out that one as well. We thought it was cool. We'll mention this. This was technically last week, I think. It might have been early this week, I'm not sure. But Little Orpheus came out. You started playing through this, haven't you? This is the Apple Arcade game.
Yeah, that was last week. This is one from the Chinese Room. I don't know if you're particularly familiar with their works.
Dear Esther, Amnesia, they did that as well, didn't they?
Amnesia, Machine for Pigs,
so the sequel. Yeah.
And also...
Rapture, everyone's gone to the Rapture.
Everybody's gone to the Rapture, and they did a Google Daydream game that I think a lot of people forget about. I think it's called So Let Us Melt.
Okay.
So, like, if you think of the Chinese Room games, and you think of, like, Dear Esther and Everybody's Gone to the Rapture, you think of first-person exploration game, wandering around, beautiful music in the background, walking sim kind of thing, yeah. This is nothing like that. This is completely different. This is a 2D platformer limbo style where you're just sort of walking from left to right, doing jumping, interacting with blocks kind of thing. But like with very high production values and beautiful artwork and all that kind of thing. And it's all about like you're, I think, a failed Russian cosmonaut who was told to fire an atomic bomb into the center of the Earth to see if Russia could colonize the center of the Earth or something like that. Very
He's
confusing.
Ivan Ivanovich.
Yes. And everybody talks like this. and I am very Russian, you see, and all that kind of like silly sort of like...
It's the, hello, I have nondescript Eastern European accent.
Yes, exactly. Everybody talks like that and all that kind of thing. And it's very, it's sort of whimsical and very odd. And I like, it's one of the few games where I was like, I have to turn the music on for this because Jessica Curry's compositions are amazing. And this one is like jaunty, upbeat Eastern European music and that kind of thing. And it's so different to what Chinese Room usually does.
Mm.
And it, but it feels so good. And it's just a testament to them as a studio that this game can come out and still be by them who have like this very specific niche of what they do. And yet they've made this game that's nothing like it. And it's like, oh, wow, this is actually really, really good and really enjoyable. And the jumping feels right. And the touchscreen controls feel right because it's so you... left screen
it's
to
side
move,
scrolling, right? Isn't it? That's that's the angle, isn't it?
Left side of the screen to move, so you swipe left or right and hold it to go left or right. Right screen to tap or hold to interact with objects to push them around. Swipe up and down to climb vines and all that kind of thing. And yeah, it feels a lot like a lot of the 2D platformers you'll have played before. So like I say, it felt a lot like Limbo and Inside in that sort of like the camera swoops out and zooms in and specific parts to give you that interaction. What sets it apart, I think, is the story, which is very silly. I've only played like the opening sort of section, and it started going into really weird places with dinosaurs in the center of the earth and all this kind of stuff. So I can imagine it's going to go some even weirder points throughout. But yeah, I think it's a really interesting game. It's really interesting to see a company like try something completely different and new. And I think if you have Apple Arcade, you should definitely give it a go. And if you haven't got Apple Arcade, but you want that kind of good 2D platformer, definitely worth getting a trial to check this one out. I think this is one of those games that's gonna, that if enough marketing went behind it, this could be like a subscription seller for Apple Arcade because it is that cool,
it's
and interesting,
very pretty,
vibrant. Yeah, it's beautiful,
like,
as well.
Really nice looking, and there's a lot of like set piece stuff because he jumps around through time periods and everything. Yeah. So you have bits that are in black and white. You have a bit where the bit that Cameron covered in the video is him being chased by a T-Rex, basically, or rather there's a huge T-Rex in the background and you're on a platform in the foreground. You have to keep ducking and avoiding it, or putting an egg on your head and hiding under it, and then stopping when the T-Rex pops his head up, looks around, goes back down, then you move forward. It looks lovely. Almost like, to me, it reminds me of, because it's not like a really fast pace flowing, it feels almost like the games like Flashback and Another World and stuff like that from way back in the day, where it's very like, you know, they're not really, really fast and agile. It's got that kind of doof, doof, doof platform up, very deliberate movements. And it's more about the world. But no, they're very interested. I'm really looking forward to playing this. So Little Orpheus is the name of that one. That's Apple Arcade only at the moment. Okay, that'll do. First pod passed back after the PG.
Did you just call it a pod passed?
I did. I called it a pup-ass. Because that's how frazzled I am at this point. But it's okay, because we made it through once again. Thank you for joining me, Rick.
Thank you for having me. It's always a pleasure to chat with you, James.
It's a good chat. It's a good chat every time. And we will be back again next week, because there's no conference. And I think maybe Dan will be making an appearance next time. We'll keep the rotor going. But in the meantime, hopefully you found a game there in that big old list that was good and fun. Go to pokemon.com and biz to find links to all the things you talked about and lots more. And very importantly, do a little subscribe and do come back and join us next time. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.